Hey folks, welcome back to Dub After. This is Chris once again. Bonjour, bienvenue, herzlich willkommen bei uns hier auf Chris White Africa. Hochandit, hey, what's the hilijang? How's everybody doing? Welcome back to Chris White Africa here on the Indaba Broadcasting Network for today's broadcast of Stray Voltage, including the Indaba Africa News of the Day for the 13th of May, 2021. Let's get straight to the headlines, ladies and gentlemen. Well, not as sexy as the mother city, the water crisis in Port Elizabeth is largely neglected by the media. Despite international attention and acclaim for the supposed climate change-induced water crisis in the mother city of Cape Town just a couple years ago, a similar crisis unfolding in Port Elizabeth, Nelson Mandela Bay, is getting virtually no media coverage within South Africa or outside of the country. A local non-governmental organization called Love Story steps in where the government fails. After thieves stole meals and equipment at a local school near Port Elizabeth, a local NGO, Love Story, stepped in to provide meals for 800 pupils after the February theft. South African Police Service Lieutenant General Peter Jacobs attempts once again to prevent an ongoing disciplinary hearing. This is the second disciplinary hearing, and this he's trying to do this through the Johannesburg Labor Court. Anti-capital communist advocate of theft, Rob Davies, the communist member of the African National Congress, has come out with a new book. For those of you who take issue with the South African opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, claiming it's little more than the ANC, one can certainly understand your grief and your concerns with the Democratic Alliance when they see that this party continues to promote Phumzile Van Damme as a legitimate member of its party when she is part of a very serious censorship cabal that's taking place and unfolding around the world. We'll talk more about that shortly. Former Democratic Republic of Congo President Joseph Kabila's brother, Zoe Kabila, has been removed as the governor of the Tanganyika province in the Congo. Major General Mamamat Debe, the successor to his father who was killed in recent conflict with rebels, made his first trip abroad, this time to visit the newly installed President Bazoum of neighboring Niger. And Yoweri Museveni has been sworn in for his sixth term as president of Uganda. The man who has a serious big man complex and seems to think that the country cannot survive without his enlightened guidance and leadership is once again installed as president. Lawyers in Zimbabwe are challenging the extension of Chief Justice Malaba's term, and 20,000 displaced people are still trapped just outside the now moribund Total Natural Gas Project facility in northern Cabo Delgado province. Two transsexuals have been convicted and sentenced to 5 years in prison for homosexual activity in the absence of any evidence that they ever committed such a crime. Lord's Resistance Army leader Dominic Ongwen, who was captured during my time based in Uganda by the Operation Observant Compass Task Force that was there in support of the African Union Regional Task Force to hunt down Joseph Kony and his band of brigands. He has been sentenced to 25 years after being convicted in the International Criminal Court. 25 years. Israel claims to have killed 10 senior Hamas military officials in recent attacks in the past 24 hours. And the leftist media in the United States is already distorting the story about Liz Cheney, making her out to be a martyr and claiming she's something she's not, a conservative Republican. China's Tianwen-1 will attempt to land on Mars tomorrow on the 14th of May, 2021, in its first ever attempt to put a rover onto the surface of Mars. And France undermines private business with introducing a bill that demands that 30% of all workers, executives in private enterprise be female. So France abandons competence in favor of genitalia. Those are the headlines today, folks. Let's get to in-depth analysis and commentary about these events taking place across Africa and around the world, with a focus, of course, on Africa. We'll start right off with the situation in Nelson Mandela Bay, or Gaborone, as it's now known, apparently, although that is not completed, that process. Nonetheless, we've already seen Google change the name on maps, even though it's not legal yet, but hey, never mind the small fact. The water situation in the Eastern Cape, according to the Daily Maverick, is clear and a present emergency. The province's 7 million people are living in fear and anxiety due to major shortage of water. The situation has been ongoing for many years, but which has now degenerated into a crisis. In the midst of the Cape Town water crisis, I reported repeatedly the urgent situation also unfolding in the Eastern Cape, particular in the Nelson Mandela Bay metro area. That situation has not improved. ever since the water situation in the Western Cape did improve. It remains very serious in the Eastern Cape and gets no attention whatsoever from the media. As the author here, Roland Ngam, says, Cape Town's Day Zero campaign was the biggest environmental story of the 2010s. It was the main conversation topic around water office water fountains and dinner tables. Will the city of Cape Town go on to a downward spiral? Will it be a biblical Armageddon down there? Everyone wanted to know. It was edge of the seat stuff. But no one's talking about this. But make no mistake about it, the water situation in the Eastern Cape is a clear and present emergency. The province's 7 million people are living in fear and anxiety due to major shortage of water, a situation that's been ongoing for many years, but which has now degenerated into a crisis. Dam levels are at 12%. The Kuga Dam has been at 4.5% for some time now. There is really no water left there. Remember that 4.5% dam level does not translate into 4.5% availability for the city. Only 1.5% of the water is usable. Nelson Mandela Bay Mayor Nkaba Banga has been desperately trying to cut down daily water consumption from 300 megaliters a day to about half that amount. He's also been doing a lot of buck passing, blaming former office bearers for sitting on their hands while water infrastructure collapsed. Well, to be fair, he hasn't been the mayor for very long, so blaming someone else is not unreasonable. He wasn't the mayor. Fires all over the province. Sarah Bartman district is also on the brink. Water supply in Makanda has been erratic for years, as reported by Grokuts Mail and other media. It is a crisis that bears attention, yet it doesn't get it. Why is that? Perhaps because Port Elizabeth is an industrial town. It's not particularly sexy, and it's not something that just makes the news much. Inside South Africa or outside of South Africa. But speaking of Port Elizabeth and events taking place there, let's talk about the theft of food stores from the national government, from students and pupils, and what happened in Port Elizabeth. After thieves steal food for 800 pupils, nonprofit donates 3 months' worth of meals. When thieves plundered their kitchen, the school in Chowderville, Nelson Mandela Bay, was left in crisis and had to plan day to day to make sure pupils had something to eat. According to the police, the caretaker first noticed the theft on Sunday the 21st of February at about 1 p.m. The food that had been cooked for the following day's meal was missing, as were cables, a kettle, and and electrical cords. He then discovered an open classroom window and the ransacked kitchen. A case of housebreaking was opened by the police, but no arrests have been made. After reading the article about the school's dire position, the Industrial Development Corporation partnered with local NGO Love Story to supply the school with meals for a term. Liska Koch from Love Story said they liaised with the school to find out what they needed. We were moved by the article and tapped into our relationship with Love Story to see how we could come to the school's aid to temporarily assist them and ensure that pupils who depend on these meals are not stranded, said Taboho Molefe, IDC's corporate social investment manager. Love Story founder Elaine Watson said, assisting those who are destitute has always been close to our hearts, and we're grateful for partnerships such as those with the IDC, as we can reach out to even more people through our efforts. Two meals a day offered by the school have been the only meals that most pupils get. We package the surplus of the daily cooked meals and send those home with some of our learners who need it most to benefit their families. The school did not have the money to replace the stolen food because it had already used its allocated budget to buy it. The school also paid a security company patrol at night from 6 to 6 at 2,500 rand a month. Now even those who work at the school come around to make sure that everything is still okay. Absolutely shameful conduct of people stealing food from school pupils. Again, as is pointed out here, these are very poor children, and the majority of these children get no food at home. So the two meals that they were provided at the school per day are their main and oftentimes sole source of nutrition. Any despicable scumbag that would steal food from children really needs their head examined. Now, this food was funded by the National School Nutrition Program, and one has to wonder why it didn't step forward and provide more. Probably because there's no money in such programs would be my assumption. I don't know that to be a fact. But given the level of theft and corruption in the African National Congress, it wouldn't surprise me at all. And Lieutenant General Peter Jacobs from the South African Police Service is attempting to have the labor court quash another disciplinary hearing against him. In February, the then suspended crime intelligence boss headed to the labor court and successfully halted a controversial disciplinary hearing against him. Now he's headed down the same path, trying to suspend a disciplinary hearing related to the slain police officer Charles Kinnear. Lieutenant General Peter Jacobs, who now heads Police Inspectorate Division, has again approached the labor court to try to stop police bosses from going ahead with disciplinary proceedings against him. The proceedings relate to misconduct allegations he faces in connection with Lieutenant Colonel Charles Kinnear, who was assassinated outside his Bishop Lavis home in Cape Town on the 18th of September 2020. Amid the allegations Jacobs faces based on an affidavit of his filed in the labor court this week is that he failed to give immediate attention to threat on the life of Lieutenant Colonel Kinnear. Lieutenant Colonel Kinnear was eventually killed emanating from the threats. The Daily Maverick reports that the anti-gang unit head Andre Lincoln, also effectively Kinnear's boss, faces allegations as well. National Police spokesman Brigadier Vish Naidu has not responded to questions about the matter from the Daily Maverick. And police corruption just continues, folks. Why in the world is this officer seeking to have a disciplinary hearing against him quashed by an outside body? If he's not done anything, then it should bear that out if he's not responsible. But once again, speaking of a reprehensible sort of conduct and unsavory sort of characters, a former South African minister and avowed communist and an avowed opponent to free markets and a proponent of theft and redistribution, that would be one Rob Davies has published a book, and his book has come out. It's an excusator for the ANC's economic failures and his own failures, specifically focused on the GEAR program, the late 1990s, which was an abject failure in improving South Africa's economy and redistributing wealth. Former minister's memoir is a candid critique of South Africa's political economy. Well, I suppose if you support where Rob Davies comes from, you would believe that. A new book by Rob Davies, a former South African trade and industry minister, provides a candid and detailed insider's account of the evolution of the country's post-apartheid political economy. He makes it clear from the outset that this is a memoir and not an autobiography, but it becomes pretty obvious that his life is a key part of this. Early in the book, the reader is introduced to the intellectual ideas that molded Davies' ideological worldview, his doctoral thesis in Sussex, examine the relationship between capital, the state, and white labor in South Africa. Under the tutelage of exiled South African Marxist scholar Harold Wolpe, he became a member of a coterie of theorists and scholars, mostly of Marxist orientation. They were concerned with analyzing the relationship between capitalism and apartheid. His 11 years in exile in Mozambique, where he worked as a researcher alongside Ruth First, an anti-apartheid activist and academic, gave him direct exposure to Mozambique's history and socialist model, which is an abject failure. It also deepened his understanding of the Southern African region. He writes frankly about the failures of Mozambique socialism while highlighting its achievements. Very few achievements to highlight there, folks. Very few. The book focuses on economic issues, and he goes on his apology tour for the macroeconomic policy framework introduced back in 1996, the Growth, Employment, and Redistribution Strategy, or GEAR. He says it was developed without prior consultation from any of the ANC's alliance members, the South African Communist Party, of which he's a member, and the Labour Federation, COSATU. He bemoans that GEAR led to controversial scrapping of the Reconstruction Development Program. The radical economic program was designed to redistribute income, wealth, and income, economic power, and at the time save time and stimulate rapid economic growth. Well, what it was meant to do is steal from those who earn and have and give to others based on their communist ideology. Folks, feel free to read Rob Davies' book, but I wouldn't lose any sleep waiting for it to come in the mail or going to exclusive books to pick it up. Towards a New Deal, a political economy of the times of my life, from the communist, Rob Davies. Yeah. Meanwhile, those of you who take issue with the Democratic Alliance, I understand your plight, your concern, and this latest incident is something that points out really what's going on here. Now, this is related to Democratic Alliance Member of Parliament, who was the youngest, she was a whip there briefly, for the DA in Parliament. That's Phumzile Van Dam, who is a member of the Democratic Alliance, and she's happily excited that she's forcing Facebook to testify before Parliament and speak before South Africa's Parliament. Facebook to be summoned before South Africa's Parliament over harmful misinformation. Facebook has been called to appear before South Africa's Parliament this month to explain what it's doing about harmful misinformation spreading on its platform, marking the first time the social media giant has appeared before lawmakers in Africa. Opposition MP Phumzile Van Dam says Facebook will appear before, God, they can't, this is terrible, editing here, will appear before the Communications and Digital Technologies Committee on the 25th of May. Facebook's agreement to a meeting is historic and a source of pride for South Africa as a first in Africa and one of the few countries in the world to successfully secure a meeting with Facebook. We commend Facebook for agreeing to the meeting, which we hope will be constructive, Van Dam told Stuff. Stuff is a publisher, an online publisher. Wow. Would you like to lick Mark Zuckerberg's boots any more there, Phumzile? Are you serious? How can anyone take you seriously as a member of the parliament when you're all giddy and excited about getting Facebook to testify as if there's some sort of rock star? Unbelievable. Now, she is a member of the International Grand Committee on Disinformation. the IGCD, the International Grand Committee on Disinformation. How Orwellian and Soviet-esque does that sound? Let's take a look at their webpage. She's proud to be a member of this, folks, in case you're not sure about that. Yet she also considers herself to be a global expert on misinformation, digital transformation, innovation, digital privacy, communications. How? And a feminist. Well, good for you. She said, it's an absolute honor to be a member of the International Grand Committee on Disinformation, a group of public reps from around the world who work in collaboration to combat harmful content, hate speech, and electoral interference in social media. Does anybody else begin to smell a rat here? Well, I do smell a rat. Now, I've never been critical of her in the past, despite some of her rather odd statements in Parliament and some of her objectionable behavior coming into Parliament, a very young member of Parliament, 31 years of age. But this takes the cake. She is a member of the International Grand Committee on Disinformation. Yeah, this is a committee that's focused on spreading disinformation. Let's talk about that. Who we are, an international array of legislators, policy advisors, and other experts who share a recognition of the damage online platforms are doing to their nation's social fabrics and democratic systems. We are working together to forge international alliances that bring shared, effective strategies in the battle against online disinformation, hate speech, and electoral interference. Well, that all sounds wonderful, but we all know that they don't really care about hate speech. These people don't care about election interference. They desire it. They desire Facebook handing out $350 million to corrupt local elections. These people don't care about what's going on. They care about their disinformation. And let's take a look at their bootlicking, all right? So here's a photograph. Look at them all beaming and smiling. An empty chair. Look at they look to their exalted savior. What's the name you see there at the head of the table? Mark Zuckerberg. The idea of International Grand Committee of Disinformation of Fake News arose from a meeting in Washington, D.C. pub between four members of Parliament. Why are four members of UK Parliament in a DC pub discussing this? Well, let's take a look at the members here. Damian Collins, Nate Erskine from Canada, Jan Schakowsky from US Congress, who? David Cicilline, US Congress, who? Two leftists from Illinois and Rhode Island. And Phumzile Van Dam from South Africa, as well as the reviled Green Renate Kunast. Renate Kunast is a member of the Alliance 90 Greens politician, long-time, lifetime politician lawyer. She has served as a member of the 19th Bundestag since 2017. Yeah, that's all I need to know. That's the membership on the International Grand Committee on Disinformation, of which Phumzile Van Dam is a proud member as she waits for her mentor, Mark Zuckerberg, to come testify before South Africa. All giddy about that. Those of you who have concerns about the Democratic Alliance, I share them when I see this sort of conduct. The opposition party leading the charge to censor South Africans' free speech. Shocking. Not really. Permanent political class, folks. Some just enter earlier. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, the former president Joseph Kabila's brother, Zoe Kabila, has been removed as the governor of the Tanganyika. Unlike his 25 counterparts, he refused President Felix Tshisekedi's Union Sacrée, a political alliance which is aimed at weakening former President Kabila. Well, gee, I wonder why he wouldn't join an alliance intended to weaken his brother. It's another setback for the Kabila household. He was dismissed on the 6th of May by the Provincial Assembly of Tanganyika in Katanga. He didn't defend himself. He was just removed from office. Interesting. Interesting. Chad's president, the Major General, 37-year-old Major General Mahamat Debe, the successor to Idris Debe, in the illegal, unconstitutional military government that's running Chad in the aftermath of the president's assassination or death at the hands of rebels, has made his first foreign visit, this time to Niger, to neighboring Niger, where the new president, Bazoum, has taken over, the first Arab president of the Republic of Niger. Debe arrived in Niger's capital, Niamey, where he was greeted by Niger's prime minister, Mahamadou, and other dignitaries. The head of state is expected to meet with Niger's new president, Mohamed Bazoum. Some 1,200 Chadian soldiers deployed in western Niger near the border with Burkina Faso, where extremist attacks have been increasing over the past few years. Both Chad and Niger are members of the G5 Sahel, which is a regional body which I've covered extensively here on Chris White Africa, the G5 Sahel. I have the distinction of being the first U.S. Military person to provide defense assistance in cooperation with the G5 Sahel Defense College when I went there to teach their faculty and to lecture at the G5 Sahel Defense College. Quite an interesting development there, that program. And Yoweri Museveni, the man who simply refuses to leave, has been inaugurated as for a sixth term in Uganda. As he has five times before, Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni took the oath of office Wednesday and was sworn in to a sixth term. Iovari Tibu Bahurawa Kaguta Museveni swear in the name of the Almighty God that I shall faithfully exercise the functions of the President of Uganda and shall uphold and preserve the Constitution. So help me God. He said to cheers and music. Unfortunately, he doesn't uphold the Constitution with extrajudicial killings, murders by security forces, unlawful detention, imprisonment, and disappearances by countless Ugandans. Tyranny in the face of cries for democracy. Bobi Wine oppressed, other presidential candidates beaten, abused, shoes taken from them, detained unlawfully, supporters murdered in the run-up to it, suppression of free speech, taxes on messaging and instant messaging and internet usage to prevent opposition from having a platform. Yeah, uphold the Constitution? I'm sorry. That's not even remotely believable there, President Museveni. What a shame. What a tragic shame for Uganda. Museveni's National Resistance Movement Party were declared the winner in the January 14th elections with 58.6% of the vote. Bobi Wine, his National Unity platform, came in second with 34%, although Wine said the vote was rigged, as did many international observers. Dozens of Ugandan youth were either arrested, injured, or killed by security forces who tried to block Bobi Wine from holding rallies. One of those injured was 29-year-old Senyova Jonathan, who was shot by a soldier as he walked home in Kampala on November 19th. He said Museveni swearing it would mean something if the president promised to punish those who wounded or killed young people like him. In Zimbabwe, lawyers are not happy about the extension of the Chief Justice Luke Malaba, his term. Top Judge Luke Malaba was criticized for dismissing opposition petitions seeking to annul the 2018 election results over alleged rigging in favor of President Emmerson Mnangagwa. He'd been due to retire on Saturday when he turned 70, but Mnangagwa's ruling ZANU-PF party used its majority in parliament to amend the Constitution, allowing the president to extend the retirement age of senior judges to 75 if they proved they were in good health. Lawyers and the opposition say the amendment allowed Malaba to continue in office and empower Mnangagwa to appoint judges of the Constitutional and Supreme Courts rather than go through public interviews was a violation of the country's charter. Indeed it is, but it should not come as a surprise. ZANU-PF treats Zimbabwe as their own personal playground, and they loot and pillage from Zimbabweans. And if you dare to oppose them, they'll call you a racist, regardless of your skin pigmentation and regardless of your racial views. Yeah. Meanwhile, 20,000 people remain trapped just outside the gates of Total's natural gas facility that's currently moribund in northern Cabo Delgado province in Mozambique. More than 20,000 Mozambicans have been trapped near a huge natural gas project in the country's Cabo Delgado province, more than a month since it was abandoned after a militant attack. People camped at the gates of the French energy company's Total Afungi site have been unable to escape despite fears of imminent violence and have limited food because the Mozambican government has blocked humanitarian access. What is that about? Why is the government blocking humanitarian access? Is that true? This is from The Guardian. Total evacuated their staff after the ISIS-affiliated group, which is a red herring. They're not really affiliated with ISIS. That's just a claim to get attention. Yep. There are fears militants will launch a large-scale attack again after Ramadan finishes next week. Unbelievable, folks, what's happening in Cabo Delgado province while the world looks the other way. Absolutely shameful. Meanwhile, in Cameroon, two transgender citizens were arrested, charged, and now been convicted and sentenced to 5 years in prison for homosexual conduct. Yet there's no evidence that they engage in homosexual conduct. Just an assumption. This in a very much violation of human rights and of jurisprudence. Social media celebrity Shakiro and friend given a 5-year sentences as rights groups fear crackdown of LGBT. Two transgender women in Cameroon have been convicted of attempting homosexuality and sentenced to 5 years in prison in a case feared to be part of a growing campaign against sexual minorities. Shakiro, a popular social media figure, and Patricia were convicted on Tuesday. The charges included public indecency and non-possession of a national ID card, an offense rarely prosecuted in Cameroon, according to The Guardian. Both were arrested in February at a restaurant in Douala, the country's largest city, targeted for the way they dressed, their lawyer said. They added that they suffered physical abuse and detention since then. Richard Tamfu, a lawyer for the women, condemned the ruling as unusually harsh. The impact is a clear message being sent to the LGBT community that they are not welcome in Cameroon. It is time for them to know that if you happen to be arrested, you could be in prison for 5 years. Same-sex acts are illegal in Cameroon, carrying a maximum 5-year sentence. Yet no evidence was provided by the court for any acts committed. No evidence. So someone prosecuted for attempted homosexuality to receive 5 years is very severe, especially given that there was no evidence that they engaged in sex. Unbelievable. Whether you believe in homosexuality or transgenderism or not, the abuse that these two individuals received is reprehensible. Convicting someone of a crime that you have no evidence they committed is beyond the pale. Beyond the pale. whether you like someone's behavior or not, or their conduct. It's not acceptable. The International Criminal Court has sentenced Ugandan Lord's Resistance Army leader Dominic Ongwen to 25 years. The former child soldier committed crimes against humanity as a commander as part of Joseph Kony's Lord's Resistance Army. The International Criminal Court has sentenced former militia leader and child soldier from Uganda to 25 years in prison after he was found guilty of war crimes and crimes against humanity in a landmark judgment. The presiding judge, Bertram Schmidt, said the panel of judges had considered sentencing Dominic Ongwen to life imprisonment, the court's harshest punishment, but had sided against it due to the defendant's own personal suffering. He was convicted in February and charged of murder, rape, sexual slavery, abduction, and torture committed as a commander in the Lord's Resistance Army, a violent cult which waged bloody campaign in Uganda and neighboring countries from the mid-1980s until only a few years ago. The court rejected defense arguments that because Ongwen was abducted by the LRA at the age of 10, he committed any crimes under duress. The 41-year-old was a perpetrator who willfully brought tremendous suffering upon his victims. However, is also a perpetrator who himself was previously endured extreme suffering at the hands of the group, which he later became a prominent member and leader of. The case is one of the most momentous in the International Criminal Court's 18-year history, but has raised difficult questions of responsibility and blame. The tribunal's decision will have a significant impact on future prosecution of crimes against humanity, experts say. Well, he first appeared in the court in December 2016 after having been captured by U.S. forces as part of Operation Observer Compass back in 2014. Yeah, so there you have it, folks. Dominic Ongwen sentenced to 25 years for horrendous crimes. So I'm not really sure what kind of message that sends to potential transgressors. If you commit rape and countless murders and child abductions and slavery and murder and start illegal wars, you'll get 25 years. So if you're 25, you'll be out when you're 50. What kind of deterrent is that? I don't know. But Dominic Ongwen has now been sentenced to 25 years by the International Criminal Court. We shall see. Meanwhile, in Israel, the situation is not improving, with Hamas launching hundreds of rockets into civilian spaces, killing Israelis and destroying civilian property. The Israelis have retaliated, and they claim they've taken out 10 senior military Hamas members, pressed ahead with a fierce military offensive in the Gaza Strip. In just 3 days, the latest round of fighting between the bitter enemies has already begun to resemble and even exceed a devastating 50-day war back in 2014. Neither side appears to have an exit strategy. Well, I think a very good exit strategy would be for Hamas terrorists to stop launching rockets into Israel. And then if Israel fires rockets or air attacks into the Palestinian Authority, then people can legitimately claim that they've done something wrong. Israel is acting in self-defense. Meanwhile, the leftist media is carrying the water and telling a false narrative about the removal of Liz Cheney. That's right, folks. Senate GOP dismayed by the vote to boot Cheney, according to Alexander Bolton on The Hill. Hardly an objective news site. Stop that. Senate Republicans are expressing dismay publicly and privately over the House GOP's vote to remove Representative Liz Cheney from leadership, which some GOP lawmakers see as a worrisome sign of former president's continued grip on the party. It's not lost on that their own leader, the lifetime troll Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, has also dismissed the former president's claims. And they themselves are under pressure from Trump to find a new leader. Many GOP senators, however, are keeping quiet about their concerns and would prefer to talk about other subjects, namely what they view as Biden's far too costly infrastructure agenda and the plan to raise taxes on corporations. It's possible that if Cheney, who had eyed a run for the Senate in 2013 and again in 2019, was a member of the Senate GOP leadership, she wouldn't have been deposed. Well, she wasn't deposed. She was removed from a leadership position because she lost the confidence of those she's supposed to lead. Why? Because of her personal vendetta against the former president. Get over it. Move on, Liz Cheney. Nobody cares about the former president. That choosing was decided months ago. We are now in the midst of the Manchurian cadavers failing administration. 1970s style gasoline queues, unemployment skyrocketing, job creation cratering, debt beyond belief, our borders invaded and facilitated, our national security undermined by an administration clearly out of its depth. Yeah, those are real issues. Who cares about Liz Cheney and the fact that she is an obsession with the former president? Call him up and ask for a date, Liz, and move on. Get over it. And by the way, you're not a conservative. Stop lying about being a conservative. A conservative would not vote to impeach an official that's not an official. Voting to impeach a private citizen is a violation of the Constitution. The fact that you're incapable of understanding that, Liz Cheney, proves that you're not a conservative. Or even legitimate as a politician. But the left-wing media is carrying the water. Oh, poor Liz Cheney, the conservative Republican. She's not. She's a Republican name only. Meanwhile, China is attempting to land on the surface of Mars. Wow, folks, the Chinese are not far behind the Americans with their Tianwen-1 set to attempt a Mars landing on Friday. It's been orbiting Mars since February and is finally ready to attempt a touchdown on the red planet. China National Space Administration will attempt to land its rover Zhurong on the red planet, experiencing the so-called 7 minutes of terror descending through the thin Martian atmosphere. The ambitious Tianwen-1 mission to Mars launched in July 2020 and contains three spacecraft, an orbiter, which is now circling Mars, a lander, and a rover. This is China's first mission to Mars, and the landing of the planet is a difficult task. Only around half of the trips to the planet have proven successful, and no agency besides NASA has landed on the surface since 1973. China is relatively quiet about when we can expect the entry, descent, and landing to begin, but reports suggest it will be at 4:11 p.m. Pacific time, or 23:11 Universal Greenwich Mean Time on the 14th. The lander and rover currently encased within a protective shell, but will detach from the orbiter earlier and begin to head towards the surface. Well, there you go. The Chinese coming down on the surface of Mars, folks. Pretty exciting. Meanwhile, the French Assembly is undermining private enterprise. L'Assemblée nationale vote des quotas pour imposer plus de femmes dans les directions d'entreprises. La proposition de loi défendue par le député LRM de l'Assemblée Marie-Pierre Rixienne et adoptée à l'unanimité doit désormais être transmise au Sénat. So what this is about is they are trying to pass a law that requires that 30% of executives in private enterprise be women by 2027, and that in 2030, 40% be women. So make no mistake, ladies and gentlemen, this is not about equity. This is about virtue signaling, selecting people to be executives based on their genitalia, not their competency and their qualifications. But that's the world we live in. Diversity, the religion of diversity. Not genuine diversity. You know, we won't pick a woman because she lived in Africa and has experience working with the informal and the formal economy. And that's something that our corporation doesn't have much experience as we seek to advance our businesses in Africa. We're not going to pick her. We're just going to pick a woman because it's a woman, because she has the right genitalia. What utter nonsense. What utter nonsense. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. There's the news with analysis, in-depth analysis and commentary today, the 13th of May, 2021, here on Indaba Africa News of the Day. Thanks a lot for tuning in. We'll catch you here next time on the program. Appreciate your support and patronage. If you're not a subscriber to Chris White Africa, hey, why not become one? It's absolutely free. If you're listening to this on the podcast, All Things Africa, hey, glad that you're on the podcast. We appreciate your support. But why don't you go over to Chris White Africa on the Tube and become a supporter, become a subscriber by pushing that subscription button right down there in the bottom right-hand corner and say subscribe. Be sure to be selecting all notifications so you get notified of future live streams and videos posted on the channel. Remember, this channel was censored. We went from 22,000 subscribers to now just 600 subscribers. So thank you all, those of you who are there, the faithful who continue to stick with us. We really do appreciate it.